is Teaching Peace in Schools, Cultivating Restorative School Communities. And tonight's session is a bonus session that is featuring Dr. Sandra Pavelka and on the theme of Restorative Practices, Changing School Culture, Building Relationships, and Transforming Discipline. Just like with every session, we have a visual presentation that goes along with the audio. So if you're tuned into the screen share, you should be seeing a slideshow placeholder with the title of tonight's session and with a little photograph image of Restorative Justice Wordle. So again, this is Molly Rowan Leach, and I am your host. It's great to be here with you and to share this learning community with you. I know that many of us coming in from all over the world, actually, a learning community of 230 people in different areas of schools and communities have come in for this 10-week course. Now, we are we're looking at two sessions this week, again tonight and this Thursday with Lauren Abramson. Lauren Abramson is going to talk about urban schools and restorative justice, and many of you may know about Lauren's work with the Baltimore Community Conferencing Center. And also of note is the fact that they were featured on the PBS documentary Fixing Juvie Justice, which is a very highly recommended documentary. Again, that's a feature from PBS Documentaries called Fixing Juvie Justice, a great resource if you haven't already seen it, that features the work of this Thursday's faculty, Lauren Abramson, and the Baltimore Community Conferencing Center. Just a reminder also, as we move into welcoming our faculty for tonight, that you are welcome to participate tonight at any point. And we encourage you to do that by pressing 1 on your telephone keypad in order to get involved in the conversation. Dr. Pavelka has invited that you press 1 on your keypad at any point during tonight's presentation so that you may make a comment, ask a question. She's got a lot of great information. So that's one point of note. And the second one is, if you haven't already, and you would like a credential sheet for CEUs for this course, don't forget that that's available for you. All you need to do is email our course administrator, Katrina. Her email is katrina@peacealliance.org. Of course, the Peace Alliance is a co-host of this course, and along with the NACRJ, nacrj.org. And Katrina is there for you to get you that credential sheet if you haven't gotten it already. Finally, feedback, questions, technical issues, all of those inquiries, please send to info@peacealliance.org. And one last reminder, too, that we really want to hear from you about your experience here, what we've done well, what we could improve on. All feedback is needed and welcome. You can do that on our back-end learning community page where all your resources are posted that you can keep, download and keep for however long you need them and want them. And that's at peacealliance.org/teach-course-page. Password, of course, is peace is the way. So without further ado, again, tonight's session, Restorative Practices, Changing School Culture, Building Relationships and Transforming Discipline, with Dr. Sandra Pavelka, who serves as the founding director of the Institute for Youth and Justice Studies, and she's also an associate professor of public affairs at Florida Gulf Coast University. She previously served as the founding director of the Center for Public and Social Policy at Florida Gulf Coast University. She's also served as the senior research associate with the Community Justice Institute at Florida Atlantic University and was the project administrator of the Balanced and Restorative Justice, or BARJ, project funded by the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention with the U.S. Department of Justice. She continues to serve as a consultant on the BARGE project. She also serves as an senior advisor for restorative justice with the Peace Alliance. And prior to her appointment at FAU, she served as the associate director of the Center for the Study of Youth Policy at Nova Southeastern University, Shepherd Broad Law Center. In this position, she administered the Florida and National Juvenile Detention Initiatives funded by the Annie E. Casey Foundation and served as research director for the center. Dr. Pavelka received her PhD in public administration with a specialization in justice policy from FAU, Boca Raton, Florida, and her dissertation, Practice to Policy Management, a Restorative Justice Framework, focused on system reform and policy implementation of restorative justice nationally. She holds many degrees and has a wealth of experience over, I believe, 3 decades or more in the field of restorative justice. And it's really an honor to have you tonight for this bonus session, Dr. Pavelka, and welcome. Welcome, and thanks for being here with us.
Thank you so much, Molly. Thank you so much. It's great to be here. I'm hoping to provide as much information as possible on the topic tonight. And if at any time you have any questions, please signal Molly, and we will get to your questions and respond to them. So without further ado, I'd like to go through our presentation. I've been in the field of restorative justice, as Molly said, for, gosh, so many years, and I just see this as an evolution. Originally, our work was mainly with justice systems at the back end of the restorative justice continuum, and early on, I really felt compelled, and I felt the need to have more work and to do more work on the front end with regard to prevention, intervention, and especially in the school setting. So that's what a lot of my work at this point in time really has been. I've been doing a good amount of work here in Lee County, Florida, which were the bases in Fort Myers, Florida, Southwest Florida. And a few years ago, began working with a principal at an alternative learning center. And this slide that is showing up now was one that appeared on their website. And it's not always the, you know, when you go onto a website for a school, you don't expect to see something like this. And Dr. Lohmeyer had really bought into restorative justice and restorative principles and implemented circles within the Alternative Learning Center to such a great success that their out-of-school suspensions for an Alternative Learning Center, which students who were referred to that were already suspended from school, so they were definitely looking to reduce suspensions of the students who had already been suspended. And they basically reduced the out-of-school suspension by almost 80%. And that was really a significant amount and furthered the interest in restorative justice, not only in this county but surrounding counties as well, and as we've seen across the country. So just to kind of review and discuss some of the just the basic principles and philosophy, restorative justice is it's really about repairing harm caused by crime or wrongful occurrence. And when we look at justice, justice requires repair. Justice requires healing in the continuum that we see. The three principles, of course, around the victim, the wrongdoer, and the community, also including system partners, the justice system, stakeholders, including counselors, law enforcement, school districts, et cetera. And, of course, in this regard, we want to provide the maximum opportunity for input and participation in the justice process in terms of determining how to repair the harm, who caused the harm and how to get the result in order to repair the harm in general. The guiding principles, of course, who was harmed, who was the wrongdoer, what are the needs and responsibilities of those affected, whose obligations are these in terms of the needs and responsibilities and accountability, and what is the appropriate process to involve stakeholders in any effort to make things right. Of course, what the ultimate goal or cause. So when we look at the use of restorative practices in schools, we look at why we want to actually implement any practice and where we can implement it and to what extent. So this slide speaks to really a number of issues. We can use restorative practices with regard to specific referrals, and they may be as minor as cell phone use or as major as some type of disruption of school function. Absenteeism, truancy are big issues, especially in high schools where students may be skipping school or habitually late to school. And so absenteeism and truancy are important referrals to look to as well. Student engagement, restorative practices, as many of those of us who are in the field know, go beyond just perhaps a referral or a wrongdoing in school. It's a way to engage students just in everyday conversations. Engagement of students and conversations are really lacking these days. So restorative practices are a great way, very beneficial in bringing students and teachers and administrators back into kind of the circle to be able to engage them and have that conversation. Any conflict or disruption in school community is, of course, another way. Student-teacher conflict, if there's any type of disruption between a student and a teacher, be it very minor or major, restorative practices are an excellent solution to be able to resolve that conflict or dispute. Dialogue at any level in the continuum, be it just a conversation, peer mediation, or in a circle or a conference. Restorative practices can also be used as an academic tool in the classroom, which we'll get to in a few slides when we talk about ways that we can use restorative practices, and as well as counseling. Counseling is also a community conferencing and school conferencing, school counseling are also other ways that we can use restorative practices. Peer mediation as a restorative practice has been around for many years. The degree to which it becomes restorative, of course, is up to the school, the students, and how we actually implement peer mediation. But peer mediation is basically where we bring the meeting of the victim and the wrongdoer or the disputants face-to-face and have them meet face-to-face to discuss what has happened. It's monitored by a trained mediator, which oftentimes in schools is a student. It can be also be a faculty member or a teacher or a counselor. But with the ultimate goal of wanting to engage students, having the trained mediator be a student is very beneficial. So the trained mediator will also have met with both participants beforehand to discuss the situation. One supporter for each of the victim and the wrongdoer is also available if desired by the parties, but not necessary. So these elements are very important with regard to the implementation of peer mediation. Now, peer mediation, oftentimes, looking at our continuum of restorative practices, or if we're looking at our continuum of care within the school. Peer mediation may be looked at on the front end for minor disputes or minor wrongdoing to repair any harm that is caused. The next practice is restorative conferencing. And restorative conferencing is a means where we're looking at additional people, additional stakeholders being brought into the group to discuss something that has been wrongdoing or issues such as a student maybe needing assistance with because their grades are apart, say. So restorative conferencing is an opportunity really to engage administrators, teachers, students, parents, the family, and school resource officers within the dialogue. It may be a one-time meeting of all involved with a possible follow-up meeting or meetings as well scheduled. All participants are available and able to discuss the concerns. So the concerns may be that of a wrongdoing. The concerns may be that the student has been not attending classes and is behind work and they may also need some type of counseling. They may have had a divorce in the family or a grandparent or a parent has died. So any type of follow-up like that is definitely within the conference and maybe case plan that is created to rectify the situation and create some type of solution or resolution. Student accountability boards and peer boards are really beneficial at the middle school and high school levels. Student accountability boards are comprised of a facilitator who really is that neutral party who brings the wrongdoer, the victim, and the school community together to discuss whatever referral may be presented to them. The wrongdoer is also in attendance. They have been referred to the Student Accountability Board or the Peer Board, whatever the term may be set with by the school or the school district. And that wrongdoer, the referral may be, again, something very simple. It may be something more significant. But those referrals then come to the Accountability Board to be rectified. Usually, the referral would not include weapon-related or gang-related offense, but that, of course, depends on the school and the school district as well. The victim of the harm is encouraged to be at the table. In many cases, the victim is not at the table, but may relate a victim impact statement to the board. And that is relayed to by the facilitator. The school community or judge also those affected directly or indirectly. Also included would be the members of the board. And these boards are students who attend the school. These students are not necessarily they may not all be A students, they may not all be honors or IB, AP students, but these students will be the students within the school who are good, who have good moral character, who have, and many of us know that, you know, those of us, I'm a professor, I know, I could count the number of students in my classes who are good students who have those really good moral principles and who I would want on a board like this to make recommendations, resolution of a wrongdoing or a referral, for example. So a student accountability board is is a very effective tool to engage so many of the different stakeholders in deciding what type of case plan to move forward with and how to resolve the wrongdoing or a referral. And in terms of a case plan, I want to get to this next slide, and then we can talk about how a case plan may look. So restorative circles is one that I know we've had a number of presentations in this offering, and restorative circles has been a real popular topic. Restorative circles may be used as proactive circles. They also may be used as academic circles. So in terms of proactive circles, they actually address a wrongdoing or a social violation or a general community discussion. So it could be within the classroom or the general school community. In terms of an academic circle, restorative circles may be used as an academic tool in the classroom or as a proactive tool for the dialogue process. So with this in mind, an academic circle could be used for a brainstorming session, a welcoming session, a grief session, to perhaps brainstorm about a certain topic within class, or maybe there's some type of issue within the classroom, such as lack of respect for a teacher or for a student or for the general classroom. So this is a wonderful way to have the fellows, the students, and the teachers be able to engage in a circle process and apply it in different ways. The circles involve a wide range of representatives from the school community. Discussions take place under a series of rules to promote participation from all members of the circle. So everyone who is within the circle has an opportunity to discuss whatever may come to their mind. They also may be able to discuss how the wrongdoing has impacted them as well. They will have the opportunity through the use of a talking piece. Your slide here has a very very beautiful feather talking piece that is a great representation of that. It's also important to note that it must ensure that communication is respectful and dignified. I've seen circles where there are very strict rules where there's no cursing, there's no shouting. You must have the talking piece in your hand to be able to speak. I actually I teach a restorative justice class at FGCU, and I actually teach it in a circle, and we use a talking piece during class, and no one can speak unless they have that talking piece in their hand. So it's been very enlightening and very great experience for me this semester to be able to teach in circle. I have also, I know colleagues across the country, my friend Don Haldeman in Pennsylvania is also a college professor, and he teaches in circle. But to go back, there are also circles who they don't use a talking piece, or they may, be able to kind of, yell out and kind of get their feelings out that way. But that, of course, depends on the nature of the facilitator and how one decides to implement the circle. Circles may also be renewed over time to modify. So if, in fact, you come away from a circle with a specific case plan or goals in mind, and things have changed through time, then you can always go back and adjust that and modify that goal to really restate how it has changed over time. For the better or for the worse, it may need to be tweaked one way or another. So this slide shows, this actually comes up. The very simple kind of table that includes the structure of each of the models, the application. So the structure being anywhere from an informal group, utilization of a trained facilitator, and how many people would actually be part of that that model. So that's on your screen for your perusal. The application in terms of very kind of either healing dialogue or with case plan in mind. And then the prep time, which is something that, you know, should be considered when we talk about restorative practices and models that are applicable to schools, because are we looking at a minimal amount of time, which is something that, of course, is considered with peer mediation, to moderate to significant. Circles and oftentimes conferencing take a little bit more time to be able to process, especially if you're looking also to follow-ups. And so that, this is something good to keep in mind. And then finally, the outcome. Peer mediation is more of an informal resolution, where the other models are more formal, and signed agreements by all participants come out of the resolution. Circles, while here it's on the slide, it mentions verbal agreements. I've also seen certain circles where there are signed agreements that come out of it, out of the formal session as well. So, of course, this can vary according to what is going on within the restorative practice as well as the school community. And then this is a wonderful slide that Paul McCold and Ted Wachtel have in one of their publications, a presentation they did several years ago, that really looks at several of the practices and applicable, for example, services, restitution, et cetera, from partly restorative, mostly restorative, and fully restorative, and how they overlap in terms of victim reparation, the communities of care, and offender responsibility and accountability. And of course, this is important to note that the degree to which these are restorative also will vary with regard to the practices, because it also depends on the facilitator, those involved, and what's really going on within these models. So while this may say they're fully restorative, they may not be, depending on other variables that come into play. Some of the values of a restorative process and the importance and significance of using them is really at multiple levels. And just to go over these several of these values briefly, mutual concern and respect is so important, especially in present day and with some of the issues that we're dealing with in schools and in communities, not only within our area but internationally. To promote a restorative dialogue, consensual decision making, and conflict resolution. Appreciation of differences and diversity. Voluntary direct participation. Interconnectedness. Focus on interests and meaning. Shared responsibility, personal accountability, personal and community values, and holistic approach, and flexibility as well. It's very important to look at some of these and say, well, yeah, these really make sense, and you know, this is so important in order to really make things happen and be able to implement these values within and include these values within a restorative process. Character development, promoting character development with, of course, school communities, with students, with even faculty and staff is so important. Increasing student connections, something that is certainly much needed, and these days we don't see a lot of that engagement and the connections, and the restorative process is a wonderful way to make this happen. Building classroom community, improving relationships, resolving conflict, building consensus, planning for the future in a very positive way, achieving mutual understanding, and ritualizing or symbolizing connections, transitions, change to a very very proactive and positive way. Now, one thing that's really important as we look at restorative practices, and of course this goes beyond even beyond restorative practices in schools into justice system, into what we see in colleges and universities as well today, is to develop some type of performance outcome. Doug Thomas and I have Doug Thomas is with the National Center on Juvenile Justice. We have a publication that is actually should be at press as we speak in the American Probation Parole Association publication called Perspectives, and it's on performance outcomes in juvenile justice. And this then applies to schools as well, because we look at performance outcomes and numbers, and oftentimes policymakers, school board members want to look at numbers and say, okay, well, how is this making an impact and to what extent? And looking at performance outcomes then gives us that answer to, of course, a great extent. It doesn't necessarily answer those very important intrinsic feel good, how this affected me personally, but it does respond to giving us numbers in terms of a reduction in referral rates, reduction in recidivism, reoffense, re-referrals, reduction in school suspension, out of school suspension. How has that student's grade point average increased? Increase in school activities, increase in extracurricular activities. So we can look at these performance outcomes within the school for each student, school-wide. We can look at it district-wide as well and be able to compare. Very important tool when we're looking at the outcome how restorative practices have made a difference in the school community and in the district. How do we actually integrate restorative practices within school culture? These are so important when we're actually thinking about whether or not restorative practices are a good tool to use within the school. So we can look at a best practice for the school community. It may also be a way of managing relationships. I know of a school principal who basically took over a school after it was actually two schools. It was an elementary school and a middle school. They were consolidated. The principals of each of those schools before it was consolidated had resigned. And so there were a number of, they retired actually, so there were a number of teachers who had been with those administrators for years, and then all of a sudden we have change, twofold. We have change in that the school was consolidated into a K-8, and we had change where the school principal then, there was a new school principal coming in to be the leader. And so needless to say, there were a number of relationships that need to be repaired. She had to kind of build up morale a little bit and really change change administration, change the views of teachers and school and the students as well. So restorative justice was a wonderful way to do that. She actually implemented circles within that school. And then just kind of moving into the next, creating positive climate, and she certainly did that very effectively and efficiently. Building a network of support at all different levels, from students to teachers to administrators to counselors, and even the inclusion of the school resource officers as well. In early intervention and prevention, healthy partnerships, and of course, youth connectedness, not only in the schools with education, but also with their family. Of course, any time that we can have some type of lesson, and in this case, a restorative practice or a restorative response or a restorative conversation, that then the student can bring back to their home and perhaps have a positive influence with their parent or other siblings or grandparents, family members, friends. That's a good thing. That's a wonderful outcome that oftentimes is not necessarily intentional, but it happens. So here's a couple of examples of school districts I've actually worked with in the state of Florida. Indian River School District has some proactive circles that they have implemented, different tiers, as you can see on your screen. Tier 1 being relationship building, Tier 2 being conflict resolution, teacher-student, and reentry circles in terms of having a student come back from a suspension or after a fight or returning from incarceration. Indian River School District, I haven't worked specifically with this school district, but I did present at a conference with them, and they have a wonderful way of implementing restorative practices in several middle schools at this point, and then they're looking to expand into high schools and an alternative education center. So they're at Tier 1, looking at building relationships, improving school climate, and Tier 3 in terms of allowing students to return from suspension, as well as in terms of a reentry circle, as well as conflict resolution at Tier 2. So there are a number of students within the school district who have also been utilized circles for various reasons. Sarasota County School District, the implementation, looking at all 26 elementary schools, 11 elementary schools, they utilize proactive, academic, responsive, and staff circles within their schools. They're then expanding restorative circles at the middle school level. They use AmeriCorps VISTA volunteers to actually work within the schools in terms of school implementation, the evaluation piece, performance outcomes, and community involvement as well. And then here are some outcomes for the Sarasota School District in terms of community building, reducing disruptive behaviors, teaching and practicing empathy, alternatives to traditional conflict resolution strategies with regard to restorative meetings, restorative dialogue, increasing engagement and accountable talk. That's what they actually call restorative dialogue or restorative conversations. They call it accountable talk within the classroom. And then this is a really nice kind of graph that shows the integration of restorative justice and comparing it with other teaching expectations and positive behavior support. Presently, I'm working with the Lee County School District here in Fort Myers, and I put together kind of a timeline in terms of what we've actually done to this point. I've actually served on a code of conduct committee where we have totally revised the code of conduct. This past year, we had a new superintendent who came on board, and he was totally engaged in our work and had vision of incorporating restorative justice into the code of conduct and into the schools. We had a couple pilot sites going on within the schools, and he really embraced moving forward and revising, making the applicable and appropriate revisions to the code of conduct and within the schools to make restorative justice happen within the school district. We also had the buy-in from the key decision makers within the school district. So again, the superintendent, the school board, the principals, and assistant principals over discipline. And they all bought into the discipline matrix and the restorative practices. We actually have a meeting coming up this week with the principals on Thursday. Intervention specialists as well, they are looked at as really the restorative coordinators within the schools. We're going to be working in the upcoming months to train the intervention specialists with regard to restorative practices, so they'll be our point people within the schools. A few pilot sites at this point, so looking at the Alternative Learning Center that has actually been implementing proactive circles for, I think it's going on, this is our third year implementing at the Alternative Learning Center. And K-8 Middle School, that was a school I mentioned previously where they consolidated and they have a new, she's been there now 3 years. So they implement both proactive and academic circles within the entire school. And high school implementing student accountability boards as well as a student kind of timeout room that basically looks at having students go to that specific classroom to work separately. It's a form of not necessarily suspension, but using restorative conversations to deal with student issues. I can take a break right now to see if anyone has any questions, Molly.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sandra. We're about 45 minutes in now, and if you would like to get involved in the conversation, press 1 on your telephone keypad. I can certainly welcome in questions at any point in the continuum of the presentation that Dr. Pavelka has for us tonight. So just a reminder, pressing 1 on your telephone keypad, and this might also be a good time, if you would, Sandra, to share with us a way for people to stay in touch with you. And I know you have a website as well that might link to your publications and whatnot.
Yes, absolutely. My email address, I have a number of email addresses, of course, but my personal email address is my name, sandrapavelka@yahoo.com. My email address at FGCU is my first initial and last name, so it's spavelka@fgcu.edu. And I can also be available. My office number is area code 239-590-7835.
With your permission too, of course, we'll make sure that your contact information, any of it that is appropriate to post on our resources page, the back end page that's password protected for all of our course participants, we'll put it there as well. And of course, a reminder that you will have this amazing slide presentation to be able to download it and utilize it as well as the audio from tonight.
Yes, and I'm also, so, we'll also have I'm sorry. I will also have a few articles that will be posted there as well.
Excellent. So to go back into your presentation, before you do that, if you would be willing, I think this would be a wonderful thing to share with us, given that so many of our learning community are our teachers and administrators themselves. Let's just say that there might be a couple people listening in right now, I'm guessing there are, that are wondering how to start. You've outlined that really beautifully tonight so far. But if people are feeling stumbling blocks, let's say if they don't have the relationships, or maybe they have a principal or a school board or administrative person that is in charge of implementation go-aheads that may not feel overly valuing of this possibility. What have you seen happen, and how would you suggest that we look at our stumbling blocks in a way that that can help us to continue to spread this information and look at our own needs in our school districts? I know that's a big loaded question, but I'm wondering if you would share your own insights on it.
Well, it's interesting because oftentimes you'll be up against almost like a wall where you'll get nowhere, and then all of a sudden, the doors will open, the windows will open, and everything just seems so easy. So really working at it, having communicating, having conversations, and using others' experiences. So looking at other school districts, what other schools have done, really makes a big difference. To kind of not necessarily to totally replicate what those other school districts have done or other schools have done, but to use them as just to say, okay, well, this is a great idea. I'd like to look at this school. Our school district to the north of us in Charlotte County, for example, I've met with the assistant superintendent over discipline for a number of years. She's on one of my boards with me. And she said, we're going to do this. I want to do this before I retire. And so she's actually coming down to meet with folks from Lee County and perhaps maybe even going up to Sarasota to look at what they're doing. And just to look at peers and discuss with peers what they're doing. And then see what may work within the school. So you have these four model practices. And, do we want to implement just more of a informal peer mediation, or are circles the best way, the best approach in a school, or accountability boards? Again, accountability boards are probably better implemented in a middle school or a high school level. Again, conversations. Going to peers, talking with other school districts that are actually doing this, and then seeing what may be most suited, most applicable to your school district.
Okay. I love that because it really ties into what you're about to share with us, and also it's true that almost every single state in this country has something happening. And whether it's statistical evidence that you might need, I know here in Colorado where I'm based, we have a lot going on as far as it concerns integrating the Restorative Justice Pilot Project with our school communities, including an 8% recidivism rate up in Longmont with the Longmont Community Justice Partnership that work within the school district there. So thank you so much again, Dr. Pavelka, and please continue.
Okay, thank you. So this next slide is actually it's been in the making now for this was part of my dissertation, and I've kept up with this research through the years. Back when I was with the BARGE project, we knew that we had been working with a number of states all across the country, but we didn't know to the extent to which that the states were actually articulating and including restorative principles in legislation and policy. So really a good amount of my dissertation was looking at that. I did an assessment of all 50 states, and this has now been updated. I'm actually working on a publication that I'm submitting within the next couple weeks that updates this research. And this is actually up to the date, up to the minute statistics. We have 11 states that actually incorporate restorative language within their legislation and policy, 7 that incorporate the balanced approach, 20 states that incorporate balanced and restorative justice, for a total of 38 states, which is so significant and so wonderful to see how restorative justice has evolved throughout our nation. And then there are a number of restorative practices as well that are implemented and articulated within a statute as well. Victim offender mediation, accountability boards, reparative boards, family group conferencing, family group decision making, and restorative circles. Common restorative language in these state documents includes holding juveniles accountable for their offense, involving victims and the community in the justice process, obligating the offender to pay restitution to the victim and or a victim's fund, and securing safer communities. And I also have included from the article back in 2008. Again, I'll be I'm submitting updated research for publication, so there'll be an updated reference hopefully soon. And then to look at schools that have adopted restorative justice as policy, the Chicago Public School District. So we're not just talking small school districts. We're talking some major school districts within our country. Chicago, Denver, Oakland, New York City, San Francisco, Minnesota, Los Angeles, Orange County, which is the Orlando area, and Lee County here in Fort Myers. And again, Sarasota, Indian River, Denver. So we're just looking Metro-Dade. We have school districts all across this country adopting restorative justice. And I might add that these school districts have also incorporated restorative justice within policy as well as within their code of conduct. So it is something that's integrated throughout the school systems. Now, this slide actually looks at some of the legislative changes that are actually within law, within the state statute, in California, in Colorado, in Georgia. These all apply to school discipline, and won't read all of that verbatim, but you all can peruse that. And again, this will be on the website for you if you'd like to look a little further. Maryland, Massachusetts, and Oregon as well. And this was in the American Educator, very interesting article on looking at restorative justice, not reacting, but in terms of a prevention mechanism to school discipline. Now, looking at future perspectives and how we can actually as we're implementing restorative practices within schools, restorativeness is always a question. It's a concern for those of us who are restorative justice advocates. So just because we say a program or practice is restorative doesn't necessarily mean it is. So whether it is or not, at the degree to which the practice is restorative, if you're lacking the inclusion of a stakeholder or victim impact, that definitely is a questionable restorative approach. The admission of guilt and accountability of a wrongdoer is very important. Many programs are not considered within their jurisdiction restorative unless there is an admission of guilt, or the offender or the wrongdoer is accountable. The culture of care within the school, very important, because if you're going to incorporate or implement restorative practices, it's very important to look at the entire culture of the school. And in the case of school districts like Lee County, they're looking to implement and change the culture of care within the entire school district to make it district-wide. But, of course, that's not necessary. That's a nice, ultimate kind of utopian approach, as I might I've said in the past. But it's also good oftentimes to start small. So if we want to start in a small school, changing the culture of care, providing alternatives and opportunities to educators and administrators to address these issues within the schools, means to build relationships, expand again, either within the school or district-wide. And then, of course, capacity building, which is so important, increasing the capacity of faculty and staff, providing connections and engagement with students. It may not include a stakeholder or victim impact, but it's so important to do that. And investing in long-term commitment, not just oftentimes those of us who have worked on grants know. If you have a grant to implement a specific practice, once that grant's over, it goes away. So it's so important to have that long-term commitment and investment in restorative justice, because we're not just looking at making this a short-term impact, but a long-term impact. So I have come to the completion of my presentation. My email address is on this slide. I gave you my other email and phone number. I'll also include that on the final slide that Molly will post on the website. So again, I'm open to any questions if you have any at this point.
Okay, and just again, pressing one on your telephone keypad if you'd like to comment, ask a question, or anything else that you'd like to put in before we close out a little bit early tonight, it looks like. And of course, Sandra, we'd love to hear any further closing comments that you might have tonight on this topic, if you do have any. And again, just a reminder to everyone that this Thursday, we will be talking with the wonderful Lauren Abramson from Baltimore's Community Conferencing Center. And the topic for Session 8, which is again this Thursday, March 1st, is Urban Schools, Evolution of Restorative Practice Over 2 Decades in Baltimore. So we hope that you have the space and time to join us. And again, a reminder, when you aren't able to join us live for these sessions, you of course have your resources where you can download all the materials for your use at your convenience. So, Sandy, it looks like we don't have any questions at this moment. Would you like to make? Oh, we do. Forgive me. Let me hand off the mic. I'm going to open it up for you, Sherry. Sherry, welcome. You're live.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Thank you very much, Sandra. I was just wondering if you might go back one slide. I was busy trying to kind of put all those pieces together. So
this slide?
Let me see. Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
So anyway, I train schools and school districts, and I'm particularly focused right now on implementation and folks, trying to figure out, a lot of them do get on board, but just trying to figure out really how to get started and how to get buy-in and, all of that. And so I'm looking here at the section where you're saying capacity building, increased capacity of faculty and staff. Is this to be able to, hold circles and use the continuum of practice? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, that's part of it. Certainly, the investment in terms of capacity building is maybe a dedicated staff member, and I probably should have been a little more clear on that and expansive, but to include a specific staff member who would be the restorative justice coordinator, for example. That was something we talked about here in Lee County and other counties too. They may have just one restorative justice coordinator for the school district, or they have a certain staff member within the school who would be that contact person. We've looked at intervention specialists here in Lee County. I know there are other counties who are looking at maybe perhaps their PBIS staff person who would be that point of contact. But really building capacity within the school to be able to really make this model efficient and effective.
Uh-huh. Okay, and then can you go a little bit more also into the provide connection to students and what you're referring to there?
That in terms of that point, I think really looking at having a connection, being able to apply restorative practices to the student, not only with regard to the referral, but also how they're actually engaging with students on a day-to-day basis. So when we talk about restorative conversations or accountability talk, whatever we want to call it, that's a way to provide a connection to the students at different levels. So one level would be with regard to just having proactive dialogue. The other level would be if there's a referral or there's a wrongdoing that occurs. So really utilizing restorative justice in a multitude of ways. It's not just about the wrongdoing, but to basically live and be able to engage and talk restoratively as well. You know, kids nowadays they don't know how to have a conversation. They're so busy texting and Snapchatting and Instagramming that we're almost teaching them now to have conversations again and be able to have dialogue.
Yeah, I think that's really critical is increasing their capacity to actually engage in a whole restorative paradigm.
Exactly.
Are you hearing? Yeah. So I am curious about, folks who have been developing that. I've just kind of heard it kind of fly by recently. Like, okay, it's part of the whole continuum of, making this effective is to actually develop the capacity of students to be able to interact and converse. And I'm just wondering if there's some resources for maybe even curriculum that's been developed or people who are really exploring, how to do that.
I think I'm actually working with the River Phoenix Center for Peace Building out of Gainesville, and we are actually developing curriculum and we're doing trainings. We're starting one training actually in May, and then we're going to develop a curriculum for restorative practices in schools. We're really looking to expand our programmatic means, but there are a number of curricula across the country that relate to training within schools and such. So it just depends on what type, and if you want to email me, I can give you some further information on that.
Okay, great.
And this is Molly. I'd love to just add, if I might, that the our former faculty from our first session, Carolyn Boyce Watson and Kay Prannis, have a couple handbook manuals for educators that have sold out in various school districts that Dr. Pavelka named earlier, called The Heart of Hope and also called Circle Forward. And if you go to our participant resource page, those are linked there as well. And I definitely would highly recommend the training that Dr. Pavelka just mentioned. If you happen to be in the Florida area, it's an on-the-ground training. Is that correct, Sandra?
Yes, it is.
At the River Phoenix Center for Peace Building. Mm-hmm. And we'll look forward to seeing that curriculum as it develops. Please keep us posted.
Oh, absolutely. I'm very excited about it.
We have more hands up. I just want to make sure, Sherry, are you complete with your
yes.
questions?
Okay. Yes, thank you very
Wonderful.
Much.
Yep, thank you. I'm going to hand off the mic to Paulette. Paulette, you're live and welcome.
Hi, I'm from Tiffin, Ohio, and I've been out of the classroom for children for quite a while as a full-time teacher, but I do go in each week and teach nonviolent skills to sixth graders. And I am just so happy. As I said, I've been out of the regular classrooms for a while, and it's different walking in part-time. But I am
so happy. Oh, absolutely.
I'm so happy to hear that the schools are really making an intentional effort to do relationship building and restoring mm-hmm. relationship healing, restorative adjustment. Because when I do sit in circles with teachers, I hear more of the line of so much is demanded in terms of state testing and all of that sort of thing. That they
oh, my
have,
goodness, yes.
Yeah, they have so, they're so conflicted so oftentimes
mm-hmm.
to build relationships with the children and dealing with those who have really mental problems and emotional problems, et cetera. I know it was some of that when I was in the classroom, but maybe not quite as much as even today. With all the pressures that children are feeling, socially, et cetera. Anyway, I don't know if you want to make any comments on that or not, but I am most of all happy to hear of the efforts across the nation to incorporate this kind of practice into the schools.
I think too with when you talk about the testing and such, I mean it has such an effect on at every level at administration on the teachers, on the students. So the pressure is all the way up and all the way down. So I think that certainly restorative justice is a great way to kind of respond to that, and the restorative dialogue and really maybe looking at this in a different way, I would hope anyway.
When you say restorative dialogue now, are you
mm-hmm.
meaning, I like to be real practical about this kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
are you meaning
yeah.
that you relate to that person as a person and try to use care and compassion in relating,
yes.
trying to understand the position of the other person.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Now
okay.
it's been called so many different things. The speak is in the Sarasota calls it accountability talk. I've heard it called restorative dialogue, restorative conversations. But that's what you mentioned is really, in a sense, what it is, and really talking in a different way to people, and with the hope to be able to carry that into your everyday life. I mean, to be able to bring this with. So if we're talking a KA traditional system, and then hopefully now we see more and more colleges and universities implementing restorative justice. So. Really making this part of not only the educational system, the justice system, but our everyday lives, and how this is our way of being able to make a difference and hopefully transform and create peace within our society. Lord knows we need it.
I work in the prison system quite a lot now, and they certainly need to learn this there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Paulette. And if there are any other comments or questions, really appreciate the conversation tonight. And you can press 1 on your telephone keypad. And I'm going to let the mic go back to Sandy now for any closing comments before we do final announcements and close out our session tonight.
I appreciate you all being with me tonight and appreciate your support and all that you do. I think we're just at a very pivotal point now within the restorative justice movement, and we're making great headway. And I look forward to coming back again next year and saying, well, you know, we've made much progress. So thanks again for having me and for being with us tonight, and look forward to hearing from you all individually as well.
And once again, that's Dr. Sandra Pavelka, and it's such a great pleasure and honor to have you with us tonight for this bonus session. This is Teaching Peace in Schools, Cultivating Restorative School Communities, and I'm your host, Molly Rowan Leach. I serve as the Restorative Justice Fellow for the Peace Alliance, and you might be interested in a website for which is linked to the dialogue series that I am executive producer and host for, and that's Restorative Justice on the Rise. RestorativeJusticeOnTheRise.org is a resource site as well as a podcast that is open source and free to the global public for your use to download and to tune in to important dialogues surrounding restorative practices, restorative justice in multiple systems, as well as peace building and beyond. So if you're interested in a national map, we're hoping to make it a global map of resources in your local area, you might check that out, restorativejusticeontherise.org. I want to thank again the National Association for Communities and Restorative Justice and the Peace Alliance for making this 10-week course possible. And certainly it's flying by this Thursday. Again, we'll see Lauren Abramson, and she'll be talking about urban schools and how they created restorative processes in the environment and climate there in Baltimore. Another note, again, please go to peacealliance.org, teach-course-page, and put your password in. Peace is the way. Make sure you fill out your our survey. We really want to hear from you about how we can best serve you in the future and make sure that we're doing the best job we can to provide you online education resources. So once again, it's been a pleasure, and thanks again to Dr. Sandra Pavelka. We'll see you on Thursday. Thanks again, and good night.